This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 340 of the Countdown Podcast. I can't really think of a good cold open, so I'll just tell you that I've been surprisingly regular this week. My name is Wayne. Bitch, please.
Jesus.
Paul's fairly unhappy with that one.
I guess, yeah, 340 at-bats.
I'm still trying to throw it in the spine.
Eventually, you strike out. And here we are. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast, Countdown Movies, sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And today is a semi-regular show we do about once every 3 or so months.
Regular. There, I tied it in. All right, go ahead. This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here.
You know what happened, Paul? You know what happened, Paul? As you played the opening intro, I said, I'll think of one by the end of this, but then I failed.
I admire the confidence you had in yourself. Even if it proved
misplaced confidence, yes.
Top 10 Last Stand is where we rank 10 films we've recently watched but not spoken about on the show from worst to best, with nothing else linking them other than the fact we have recently watched them. So they can be comedies, horrors, action films, anything you can think of.
It's but in all... Paul's case, horrors.
Okay, there is a horror or two on my list. Of course, it's also October, so what else would it be?
I don't know, because why would you watch that shit? But hey, what up?
You'll find out when we watch a couple of horror films as we go towards Halloween.
Kids, that's why.
But yes, top 10, last 10, colon, fourth quarter edition, because we need to have a name, a byline name for it to delineate for the purposes of Apple Podcasts. That's it. If you're regular to the show, you know what we're about to do. If you're new, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Hello.
We need 10 to have quite a few downloads of this particular kind of episode, because I guess we get to do 20, usually, mini reviews.
That's right.
Of films we've been watching. So without any further ado, let's get into the segment that kicks it all off. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
What's recounting this week, Paul?
Well, no poll last week because I was on holiday and
as was
I have a chance. Yeah, you were on holiday too.
That's right.
I was away from my AFK, shall we say, from AFK. Most electronic devices. Anyway, we'll have the vote for last week's show next week. However, there was a point of controversy which did raise its head in a couple of different venues. One of them,
really,
on Twitter from the Dumb Guzzler podcast. Does it keep you awake at night knowing that you put out a podcast that proclaims Ross to be the best character ever in a comedy series?
No problem at all. I have no problem with it at all. Sleep like a baby, motherfucker. No, I don't know why.
Ross from Friends, that would be.
Yeah, I'm done with that, man. What? Who? Okay, fine. Hey, yeah, keep going.
Rob Walters then doubled down over in the Facebook listening community. Links in the show notes if you want to get involved in the discussion and said, whoa. Did I hear Wayne talk trash on George and Kramer being terrible and hard to watch? And then turn around and say that Ross from Friends is the best character on a TV show? And he basically then quoted this.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Well, you know, curses to you for giving Paul an opportunity to play that stupid sound. Yeah, absolutely, man. And I think I did clarify in that post that they are good characters, but they're not my favorite. You see, Ross is more watchable than Kramer because he's just more, I don't know, for me, I like him more. What can you say?
Generated a bit of discussion, and David Powell, top level patron of the show and moderator of the Facebook list community, said, I'm with Wayne on this. Ross is the best character on Friends.
Boom.
But he's the best character overall.
Yeah, for me he is. But then again, I'm an odd man, Paul.
Catherine Gwerd said, but Ross is awesome.
Word. Thanks, Kitty.
Nerds unite. Mm-hmm. Hashtag. And then Chris Sutherland said, agreed. Ross is vomit. Friends is old and dated.
Hey, to each their own. What can I say?
Yeah, exactly. That's always going to be the case. But I just thought that was worth recounting.
Fair enough.
The controversy there. Go back and check out last week's episode if you're wondering what all that is about. But otherwise, that's it for the recount for this week. We short and sharp because 20 reviews, we need to push on.
That's right.
And we do so on the other side of this music cue. That's up to last. Fourth Water Edition is the subject of this week's countdown, and we've already explained how this all works. I have to now give the huge qualifier. This is my worst ever list.
Oh, so we'll be competing for worst lists.
I cannot believe how shit. And some of it comes back to we've had all these movies that have been pushed over the last few months.
So all the crap is sort of filtering out and onto our faces and necks and chests.
Anything that I don't care whether it fails is still being released here in Australia. But because half the country's in lockdown, they're pushing the rest of it to the end of the year.
That's
so
right.
It's why we're struggling in our main reviews to find topics for those who don't listen there. But it's also explaining how I've watched some real shit in the last 3 months.
Oh, yeah. You know, I always aim for a 10, just so you got something to talk about and rag on and start with, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've never watched 10 good films, but any film I pop in there, with the exception of my number 10 today, I hope, like, maybe this will be good. Like, I don't go in expecting
all of them.
Well, no, actually, 10 and 9 now that I think about it, and 8.
Well, look, I'm always, you know, waving the flag for any movie. It's like, I hope you entertain me. You know what I mean? And I don't want you to fail. I want you to succeed.
Yeah.
But you seldom do.
Yeah, well, so, if my list is anything to go by, whew, we are getting very high up before I recommend.
We'll hear your number 10.
We will give you the marker where we recommend that you check out, at that point, anything afterwards.
Sure.
Mostly.
Mostly.
In the linear case of myself and all over the case of Wayne. My number 10 is, you know, Nicolas Cage, right?
I do know some Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a favourite around these parts. We do enjoy Nicolas Cage.
I like me some Cage.
We did Willy's Wonderland as a main topic review earlier.
You know, it was a bag of shit, but you know, what do you want?
We watched Jiu-Jitsu, and I think it made your worst 10 of last year and came perilously close to mine.
Bloody hell, it was horrible. But Nicolas needed another Lamborghini.
Yeah. Well, my number 10 is worse than both of those films.
Oh, no.
It is utterly
Nicolas Cage?
Incomprehensible. Piece of shit, which makes zero sense whatsoever.
Okay.
It's called Prisoners of the Ghostland. It's directed by Japanese director Sion Sono. And stars Nicolas Cage, Bill Moseley, Sophia Patella, and Nick Cassavetes.
I think I know that last two names.
Nick Cassavetes directed The Notebook.
He's a director.
Yep.
And he's in this.
Yeah.
All right, tell me about it.
And here is the byline or the description. In the treacherous frontier city of Samurai Town, a ruthless bank robber is sprung from jail by a wealthy warlord, the governor, whose adopted granddaughter, Bernice, has gone missing. The governor offers the prisoner his freedom in exchange for retrieving the runaway. Strapped into a leather suit that will self-destruct within 5 days. I actually think it's 3 days. The bandit sets off on a journey to find the young woman and his own path to redemption.
Is the bandit Nicolas Cage?
He is.
All right, Paul. I actually am bracing myself. I'm in the brace position to hear about why this is such a piece of shit.
I think it's meant to be a dystopian kind of post-apocalyptic sort of future where this ghost land is and whatever else. And
is that what it's? Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah
right.
Yeah.
And they're in some weird hybrid culture of Japanese culture mixed with the Wild West. You got cowboys walking around with geisha girls. And who are meant to be clearly prostitutes, all singing in unison.
Huh?
All, you know, just breaking into a bit of a dance in a moment.
What?
Yep. It's just
bizarre. In context with the movie? Or
no, makes no sense.
What the fuck? I hate that shit.
No.
You in particular hate that shit for musicals. All. But at least a musical is a musical. This is some motherfucker start singing.
I mean, it's not like a huge number, but they just all start sort of chanting the same thing. Bill Moseley is this governor, warlord, whatever the fuck he's meant to be. He walks around and it's kind of like he's the pimp.
Of the geishas. Okay.
But then they all kind of respect. So whenever he says something, they all chant it back at him and the cowboys are all doing whatever. He's got a samurai dude as his kind of sidekick. And the samurai dude was from an old film called Versus, one of my old...
I remember that. Faves. Is it the same character?
No, the same guy playing.
Oh, same guy.
Actor. And whatever reason, he just cuts up anyone he tells him to cut up. And everyone's terrified of him. And I don't understand why. Nicolas Cage. The bombs in Nicolas Cage's suits, by the way, are strapped over various parts of his body, including two that are strapped near his testicles. And if he has impure thoughts about a woman, they will somehow sense this neurologically and explode his balls off.
Wait, are the bombs magical?
Apparently.
Oh, fuck me.
Well, not magical. They're meant to be somehow neurologically...
That's better. So wait, if he gets a Woodrow, his balls get blown off.
Basically. You would be fucked, sir.
I mean, how does he come home on a Tuesday night? Shit. Wow.
Yeah, and look, I'm not even doing it justice. It's so far all over the place. And then there's a sort of fight scene with this, and then there's another. I can't describe it. I watched it very late at night, and I kept thinking, I must have fallen asleep, missed a scene there. Nope.
That's it.
It just makes no sense. It just jumps from this to that. establishing nothing. And why are we doing this? What is this part happening for? How did he get to there? Why are they letting him walk out? Is everyone now attacking him? What's the samurai dude defending him this moment for, but now fighting? I don't understand any of this.
So wait a minute. Is this? Do you think that this was the intended division, like vision of the director?
I don't know.
Or was it a subject of the studio just walking in with their own samurai sword?
This guy is renowned for directing weird
shit.
Oh,
then it's by design.
Yeah.
Which means it's shit.
Yep.
If it didn't work, I mean, which it clearly did not.
Some of the other films are called Why Don't You Play in Hell, Suicide Club, Anti-Porno. Yeah, they're all Japanese films. I think this might be his first English speaking film.
Because there's a swath of these Asian directors who are known for their out there style. They're usually Korean though. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just,
is so far off base with that. And I will give you a little spoiler for later on my list. The best shit on my list, well, one of the best shit on my list is Korean. So
okay,
yep,
fair enough. Nice work. All right, my number 10 is a movie called, well, Paul, you know I like me some Kate Beckinsale.
Yep.
So I saw her latest film, which is called Jolt.
All right. I just won this week. In terms of how shit my list is.
Because this is
way higher on my list.
Yeah. I bet.
Because this is shit.
This is shit. And it's way higher. Okay. All right. Well, everyone, this new film of hers is about her having some kind of bollocky psychiatric condition since birth, where she gets massive rage episodes when she sees someone being an asshole. And then somehow she has extra human strength during that spell and beats the shit out of people. So she has some electroshock therapy thing fitted to herself where she can shock herself out of being violent by pressing a button. And that seems to interrupt the pattern or whatever, okay? This movie also has Jai Courtney in it. Yeah. And
which immediately, as soon as I saw him, I was like, wow, this is going to be shit.
And this is a countryman of ours, so I don't like to be this guy. As you often called him the franchise killer.
Yep. Well, in this case, he's the franchise. I guess he's kind of the condom for this particular franchise.
Well, you know, this was previously called Matthew McConaughey Syndrome, because before he was a serious star doing, you know, Happy Time, he was doing all these How to Lose Again, That Guy in 10 Days.
Yeah, yeah.
All the movies lost money, but they kept employing him. He was weirdly employable. So is Jai Courtney, okay? And so I would say this about the film, okay? First of all, if you are not following Kate Beckinsale on Instagram, do that shit. She's a fucking Martian. There's no way anyone that age looks like that. I don't know what's going on, right?
She's incredible.
The film itself has got about a few good action scenes. I will say it's got a few. There's a scene where she beats up like six other dudes, and it's actually not terrible in terms of choreography. There is zero surprise as to who the bad guy is. Zero. Like, as soon as you see it, you go, there you go. Right?
Shock. Horror.
Absolutely nothing. And it was like...
In fact...
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
That anyone would not see how this film was going to go.
Yeah, there's a scene where she comes across a purposely cunty waitress, like, and it was stupid. You can't make the waitress a bad guy. It's just an excuse for her to flip out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, this is misguided, and there's nothing here that's really going to help you out. It's like, it's all right. Like, it's not all right. It's shit. It didn't offend me, but it was shit. How's that?
Basically, my review wound down to this. When you try and combine Crank and Lucy,
yes,
it's still shit.
Yes.
In fact, arguably it's shitter still.
Did you like Crank?
I like Crank a lot more than this.
Yeah, I like Crank more than this. But
because it was way more stylized and had a bit more going on in terms of the camp. Not so much the storyline,
yeah,
but in terms of, well, it was more surprising.
No, there was a bigger story than she was born with this condition that she has to shock herself out of, but now she can whoop your ass.
Like, and they literally do leave this film at a point implying that it should be a franchise, like there's going to be a sequel.
Do you know what? I reckon that is a mandate on every like agent's desk. It's like, you want to be, I'm going to agent for you as a writer, but you got to give me a version which has this open ending in case shit goes down, right? That's what every one of these Netflix films does that, because it's like, maybe you'll get another 10 million off Netflix. That's how this shit works. So I reckon you're not going to see it would be rare for you to see one of these Netflix type films where there isn't a potential way to get...
Yeah, but you didn't need that last scene. It was so tacked on and ridiculous. But anyway, other than the fact the narrator is the person who comes involved. But yeah.
Yeah.
Jolt, Kate, Gunpowder Milkshake.
Yes.
This run of these sort of female-centric action films. How do you rank the three of them?
It goes exactly the way you just said it.
As in from worst to best?
No, best to worst.
I said Jolt.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Gunpowder Milkshake on top.
Agreed.
Then Kate. Then this.
Yeah, 100%. This is the worst of them by a long way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a shame. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yep. But it's much higher on my fucking list. And I'll tell you what's way worse than Jolt.
What?
Space Jam colon, a new legacy.
Ah, how did Space Jam go? I did not see this, but everyone is fingering it.
It's 115 indeterminately long minutes. I took my 8-year-old daughter to see this because we were bored one day. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Let's go to the movies. She was bored.
That's
amazing. I was bored. Now, I like basketball. She likes cartoons.
A match made in heaven, you would think.
Yeah. But we were both sitting there going, she's like, literally, she at one point, with still 30 minutes to go, she, because she's finished her popcorn, she's finished her drink, she's like,
oh my God.
When an 8-year-old is doing that at the cinema, you know you have a problem on your hands. This is a soulless, absolutely bona fide, shameless cash grab, which is all about promoting Warner Brothers IP.
Yeah.
Literally, the whole stake, they just get everyone. Yeah, fucking Pennywise the Clown. What? In the background, watching the basketball game between LeBron James versus his son, and the son with the all the sort of avatar killer sort of robot-y things versus LeBron James with Bugs Bunny and Babs Bunny, whatever the fucking name is, and all the rest of them, right? It is unbelievably bad.
Can I ask you, because I remember you talking about this, and I thought, because I actually quite like it when IP mixes and stuff like that, and when you've got some behemoth like Warner Brothers who can actually do that, it's like, oh, can we make that meaningful? Do you then tell me that the execution of this was in a way that was just was like so commercial that it was disgusting, as opposed to an interesting, oh, there's the, like, you know, that Steven Spielberg film, the fucking...
Ready Player One.
Yeah, that, I think, I didn't really love that film, but that, what they did was, oh, there's the fucking DeLorean, and there's the this, and that was cool. It wasn't obviously like that here, was it?
No. Shit. This is horrendous. LeBron James is also no Michael Jordan in front of camera, and Michael Jordan himself, not a great actor.
No.
Axe rings around LeBron James, who almost portrays himself to be quite cunty.
What?
He's an asshole in this film.
Is he?
To his son. And, it, you know, he's got his wife, in the, who's not his real wife in real life, but the one of the women from The Walking Dead, Star Trek Discovery or whatever it's called.
Okay.
She is his wife, Sneaqua Martin Green. And she's trying to tell him, stop being so hard on your kids. You're going to stop them having any interest in basketball. He's like, nah, this is how you succeed. This is how I was taught. That's what you got to do.
This is an odd note to play him being the hero.
You're meant to throw in with him.
Yeah, I know.
Big surprise. And his son's like, fuck all that, Dad. And joins with Don Cheadle, who is the supercomputer that drags them all into this world. So to speak.
Your disdain for this makes me go, ugh, fuck this. I was never going to watch it anyway.
No, exactly. And there's zero chance or need for you to do so. I mean, it updates the CGI to be, rather than 2D, they form into 3D characters.
Not enough, mate.
Guess that looks all right. Yeah. That's the best thing I can say about this piece of shit. Steer well clear of Space Jam.
Okay.
I think it's colon, but who cares? A new legacy.
Now you know it's bad. Okay. My number 9 is a John Cena film, and it's called Vacation Friends.
No, I haven't heard this one.
Oh, dude. I saw the trailer, okay? And what it is it's about... the guy is a... Lil Rel and John Cena are the two male leads.
Lil Rel Howery from Get Out.
Get Out, exactly, right? Him and John Cena are the two leads. They also got their wives, and I'm sorry, I can't remember their names. I didn't write it down. So, but I don't know them as actresses. And they go on holiday. So this black couple, Lil Rel and his wife, goes on holidays in Mexico, and they encounter John Cena and his wife. And these guys are full-on moondoggy, crazy, what's up, just a crazy weird couple. They take life as it comes, and they do cocaine a lot, and they end up with, like, you know, they sink their jet skis and they end up,
so John Cena is the crazy guy. So they're doing the whole opposite casting,
absolutely, okay, right? But here's the thing though, I saw the trailer and I looked at the John Cena character and said, I'm gonna hate him. I'm just gonna hate that character. I'm gonna hate watching this. And this was gonna be my number 10 when I just went, I'll put it on. So I'll bet you this is a piece of shit. And it is a piece of shit. Right? But it's less shit piece than the previous ones I mentioned.
Jolt.
Yeah, it's this one
is better than Jolt.
It was, because I'll tell you this, right? Although this movie is full of weird, like, it places Lil Rel's family as a, like, an aristocratic black family.
Okay.
And then John Cena is the other way. Like, you know, they're sort of just normal people, right? And there's this one scene where Lil Rel and his family go on this traditional fox hunt, because that's how our ancestors did it. And I went, no, they didn't. Fox hunting started in, like, England. And I'm pretty sure it was before, like, you know, it was just a weird note to play. I was thinking, this is odd, right? And it does have occasional cracking jokes, I'll tell you that. That's why this is pushed up a bit. There's a couple of jokes which are quite funny, and the setups are good, but
not enough.
Everyone, like, there's enough chemistry, and I'll tell you this: I ended up liking the John Cena and his wife character a lot more than I thought I would, and that's why this is on the bottom. it's better for that. I would say it's about a motherfucking 58. Nah, 56 maybe.
Wow.
56.
So you're number 9, 3 stars.
Yeah, but you know how I work, Paul. I'm not going to like it as much.
What did you get Jolt?
Jolt was a 4 out of 10.
Ooh, yeah, that's exactly what I gave it.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's way higher on my list.
But yes, Vacation, friends. You'll never rewatch it and you'll never quote from it, but it is amiable enough to pass some time. Right. I'm not recommending it.
You forgot. You added an extra syllable in there, which was, I will never watch
there
it.
There you go.
My number 8 is part of another franchise film. And I think it's meant to be like the soft reboot of the G.I. Joe universe.
Snake Flaps?
It's Snake Eyes, colon, yeah. G.I. Joe Origins.
I really wanted to watch that for this one. I missed out on it. And I heard it was a box full of asshole sandwiches. Yeah.
It's
really?
A 1.5 star. It's a high 20s. It's really bad. Except the first 20 minutes, I thought, you know what? This ain't so bad.
Yeah, Henry Golding, yeah?
Yeah, Henry Golding is terrible.
Is he?
He's really terrible.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, Henry, but he's not alone. Don't get me wrong. He's got a lot of friends in this film in the terrible car.
Fuck you in your car.
There's not one fucking good performance in this movie.
Wow.
The dialogue is inane.
Can I ask you, was it boring?
Yeah. Yeah,
it was boring, yeah. Because that's what I heard. It was like it was like just takes too long to
like
get you
those
going.
Two versus the entire fucking organization of criminals fight scene which takes place is entertaining. After that, the fights are the ass. I mean, Samara Weaving shows up in the most blink and you miss it kind of role.
Sure.
As whatever G.I. Joe character, it's garbage. And I didn't play with the toys and I have the fondness nor the nostalgia for it. Maybe you will if you have seen it, but it's terrible. It's a 1.5 star film.
All right, cool. Well, we won't be seeing that one.
Don't. Do not.
Okay, my number 8. Okay, look it up. Paul, have you ever heard of D.B. Cooper? Do you know who that is? The only reason you may have heard of it is because the only reason I heard of it is in the Loki.
I'm thinking of D.B. Sweeney.
No. No. In Loki, there's a scene where he talks about all the things he did in the past and he jumped out of an aircraft with a bag full of money. And that apparently is I'd never heard of D.B. Cooper before, but it's some guy who, he's a mystery man. He calls himself D.B. Cooper. He hijacked a 727. He traded the passenger's life for $200,000 and 4 parachutes. And then he jumped out of the plane. This is in like the fucking whenever it was, the 50s or some shit. And that's it. They never found him. So he maybe got away with it or whatever, but no one's ever found him.
Or smooshed in the ground somewhere.
So this is a doco called The Mystery of D.B. Cooper, because I really wanted to know what it was, because apparently everyone knows who this is except for me, right? And you.
Us.
And it's a profile of 4 or 5 people who are suspects of either being D.B. Cooper or knowing or being like being his relative or that kind of shit. And it's interviews with each of them. And also an interview with people whose obsession it was to find out who he was, as well as a pilot of the plane and the stewardess and the FBI agents who chased him. They're all still alive, right? And so they're actually talking about how they got it. And an element is that it's shown that each of the people who are obsessed with him, you see how they have personal reasons to obsess themselves with the character and why they chase after him and why they believe. And they're all completely convinced. And they're all like, he is definitely my uncle, or he is definitely my ex-husband, my roommate, whatever, this, that. It is actually surprisingly engaging, this documentary. Unless you have an interest in this D.B. Cooper story, which I only saw in Loki, right? I would say that this
is... Why is it so low then? Why is it 8?
Because I don't think it's actually as interesting. Like, it's not as wide, not widely interesting. It's a good enough watch, but I wouldn't point you towards it and say, you got to see this show, all right? It's more that it's like, okay, well, that's kind of weirdly interesting.
Well, yeah, I'm a long way from weirdly interesting, or yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
On my list. But all right, thank you for that one. My number 7, you remember Neil Blomkamp?
Blomkamp, yes, yep. I do.
Director of District 9, which is quite
Elysium,
polarizing.
Yep.
Elysium and the absolute piece of shit crappy. Well, you can all be rest easy because he now has a worse film than that.
Oh, what?
His slide into shitness continues.
Oh, no.
Because he's just released his first supernatural horror film. It's called Demonic, and it was shot during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, does it look like it.
Why?
It looks terrible.
Looks terrible?
Yeah, it looks terrible. And the whole premise of the film is daughter of a woman who went on a sort of mad rampage and burnt down an institution that she was in and killed lots of people is summoned to getting involved in this experiment where the mum is in some advanced situation of, I can't remember what it's called, lockdown syndrome or something, where she can't move and speak.
Okay, so
but she's still mentally cognizant.
Okay.
And they want her to go into, they've worked out this technology where they can insert her into her mum's mind, like digitally, into her dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like this really shit retro rotoscope.
I was just going to ask you what that was going to look like. Yep. Yeah.
Which, so that's what happens in the film, and it turns out there's a demon involved. And I'd love to say hijinks ensue, but they don't. It gets really fucking boring. Nothing happens. A few people say fuck, and there's barely any violence nor interesting shit that happens whatsoever. It's not frightening. The dialogue's terrible. Every performance is stilted.
Really? Can I ask you? Because Blomkamp's movies are always in, like, you know, sort of like have this layer of apartheid and whatever. You know, he's like, you know, none of that in here?
No, there's a little bit of Catholicism and whatever.
Okay,
else.
So no theme.
It flirts with one good idea, which would be a spoiler, so I can't even mention that. So it's just garbage.
Rough rating?
Yeah, 1.5 stars again.
Yeah, okay.
We're still around the 30 mark.
That's a shitter. Okay.
And it just ends with a wet, like, that's it? That's your end? Fuck. And speaking about unearned endings, this film has it in spades.
Really?
Yep.
What's it called?
Demonic.
Okay.
Do not
watch. Okay, cool. My number 7 is a film called The Protégé.
You did champion and say, Paul, let's watch this one.
I saw the trailer. Dude, it's got Sam Jackson, Michael Keaton, Batman's in it.
Most importantly. Right.
Maggie Q.
Right.
Good Lord, she's lovely. And I don't even have yellow fever and she's beautiful. Anyway, so I'm Asian, everyone, it's fine. All right, so Sam Jackson plays a hitman who finds Maggie Q when she was a child in Vietnam and then rescues her from a bunch of extremely bad Vietnamese characters, gangsters, right? And then he trains her to be an assassin, and when she grows up, she and him work as assassins who only kill bad guys.
Of course they do.
Okay? Then, you know.
No women, no children.
Anyway, and then, you know, Sam Jackson gets whacked, so she goes after who's responsible. And
oh, shock horror. I mean, Sam X. The trailer to this film gives everything
away. Everything away, right? And it becomes an action-y spy thriller, and she kills her way up, okay? Now, first of all, I saw the trailer for this and went, oh my God, look at these people. Paul, we got to cover this. And Paul goes, I heard this is a piece of shit, bro. And I went, okay, let's just back it off. So we did, right? What's frustrating about this movie is that it is a mess, all right? But I do think there are things to like in this film. It does not save it, right? Maggie Q is excellent, okay? I like her in this film. Michael Keaton elevates a relatively ho-hum role, does not save the film, but they have good dialogue and their interplay is okay. He has this scene where he flirts with Maggie Q. That's the kind of flirting I wish I could do. I have zero game, everyone. But if I'm honest, I don't buy that Michael Keaton is getting her. He's wearing an ascot, for God's sake. Don't wear a fucking ascot.
You can't handle the truth.
And by the way,
that is an interesting decision, isn't it? Does it fit his character? Is he
no, because he's supposed. Michael Keaton shouldn't wear an ascot, okay? He isn't that guy.
Well, arguably, no one should wear an ascot.
No one should wear one, man. It's just weird. It's inside your shirt and stuff. It's weird. Anyway, I will tell you this. Sam Jackson is fucking in it hardly at all, right? So forget about it, right? It is nicely filmed. Soundtrack's a bit blurry. I remember not liking the actual, the way it sounded. Robert Patrick is in it as well. And he looks ridiculous as an apparently 70-year-old biker with a sleeveless denim vest and a pot belly. And he's supposed to be he's got an all-white biker gang who inexplicably live in Vietnam. I'm not sure how this happened. All right.
They just never left.
Yes. It is surprisingly gory in places. There is a fuck fight scene where two characters are having sex, but then they sort of fight.
Oh, like the best of shoot 'em up.
Yeah. It wasn't even as good as that, and that
Holy
one sucked.
Shit.
All right. So look, it's... Like I said, it has some good scenes. I'm not going to recommend it to you. This is the Casino Royale guy. This is Martin Campbell, this director.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so this should have been fine. And also, it's the best ever genre of films ever. Spy thriller. So if anyone wants a spy thriller to succeed, it's me, but this did not.
So score, sir.
Score. Oh, shit. Damn. You know what? If I had to put a... Now, here it is. If I had to put a poster, a quote on a poster as a
critic...
Oh,
shit. Damn.
It wouldn't be that. It would be... This is a film that definitely came out. That's it. I can tell you that. I'll give it a 50. There. Boom. I didn't hate it, didn't love it, but you know what? Nothing.
All right. Well, we're getting there. So that's right there. Number 7 for you. My number 6 is a film which you will vehemently hate.
Okay.
You would be so angry with this movie because of where it goes that I reckon it could be on your worst turn of the year. Therefore, I am recommending to you, sir, here's a film for you to watch.
All right.
And I want to see if you get as angry as I'm predicting that you'll get.
All right. This is interesting.
It's called Sweet Girl.
Sweet Girl.
Stars Jason Momoa.
Uh-oh.
It's a Netflix film. You know, they touted it, you know, one of their big releases of the month couple of months ago. Right. And it's directed by no one named Brian Andrew Mendoza.
Mendoza!
It basically follows his husband, single daughter.
J-Mo, yeah.
Yeah, J-Mo. And the wife dies of cancer complications.
Right.
And there's a big pharma company that has a drug which could have given her some hope. But basically, they don't release it because they get bought out by another or maybe it's a small farmer company, get bought out by a big farm, and they stop them from releasing it so they can continue to make money off their own alternative.
Holy shit. Right? Okay.
So he basically threatens to kill the CEO of this company and says, you're dead.
Jason Momoa says that.
Yep.
Because he could have saved her. His
home. Had you released that drug.
Yep.
And he says it on national television or whatever.
You're dead.
Yep.
Wow.
And so then basically it follows him going after this guy to make him pay.
What?
Dragging the daughter along. The daughter is from Dora the Explorer.
Okay.
The live action movie. And also in Sicario, Day of the Soldado. She was the young girl in that.
Righto.
And she's sort of being dragged through this film. I'm going to say this. I'm not going to give you away the twist, right, but there is a twist.
All right.
I'll leave it at that.
And you think I will get angry at the resolution of this film?
Yep.
Or lack thereof,
yep,
based on what you're telling me. Okay. All right. Sweet girl.
So much so, I will confidently predict this ends up in your worst 10 of the year.
All right, cool. It's on. Sweet girl, putting it on the list.
As for me, I gave it 2 stars. It's shit.
2 stars, shit house.
It's completely by the numbers. There's nothing interesting about it other than the twist. The twist being what it is. I can't talk about any more than that, unfortunately, which really ends this conversation here.
Okay.
Moving on.
All right, good. Okay. I'm going to tell you about my number 6 movie, okay? It's a film called Happily. Right? Okay.
Never heard of it.
All right, and this is interesting because it's sort of one of your boys, not your boys, but Joel McHale's in it, okay? Community.
My boy.
Yeah. Oh, and it actually has 2 people in it from sitcoms that you like.
All right.
He plays across from a girl who, and I can't remember her fucking name, but she's, you know, in Scrubs, the shitty season? Yeah. She was the JD sort of girl, she
kind of picture her.
Blonde girl, she's got a mole here, it's like...
Was she in Happy Endings? That TV show?
No, not that I saw. Not that I saw. But she's like of that ilk for sure. Okay. Now this is a film called Happily, and it's about Joel McHale and his wife, that girl, who are this perfect couple. They've been married for 14 years, and inexplicably they still cannot keep their hands off each other. They're like teenagers, like they fuck every day, twice a day, and they never fight. And if they ever have a slight disagreement, they forgive each other immediately. And it's such a sickening phenomenon that all of their friends hate them.
Fair enough.
Okay, fair enough. I hate them now, right? And then one day, a mysterious suited stranger played by Stephen Root, he turns up at their front door. He claims to work for the city. He asks to go inside and chat. Then he opens a briefcase which has 2 syringes inside it and says, "Sorry, we made a mistake. It's not normal for you two to be in love like this because the law of diminishing returns in a relationship is a defense mechanism for humanity, yada da da da. You're not supposed to continue to be so actually in love with your partner for so long. So you got to take this shot, and when you wake up, you're going to be miserable just like the rest of us."
That's pretty funny. Right? Carrie Bish is her name.
Carrie Bish, that's right, Bish, right? And so
Bichet,
yes, there's an accent there. And that's all I'm going to tell you, because this is not a rom-com like you think it is. It's a fucking thriller, all right?
Oh, well, it sounds all right.
I know it does, all right? And it has its moments, this show, okay? It's got 2/3 into the film. I'll tell you, I had no idea what's really going on, but I was still intrigued. That's a good sign. But unfortunately, Paul, it doesn't actually offer you any answers at the end. Oh. It kind of does, but you don't get the clean answer you want. The movie instead tries to make a different point to you, I would say. And I wanted the damn explanation. So that stopped, that pushes it down to 6 for me. But I will tell you that on the upside, it is definitely different and does not go the way you think it will. On the downside, it's too uneven and ends with a fizzer, as far as I'm concerned. There is even, you might argue, a supernatural element in here. Just an element. And that's why it's a very unusual film.
So far, I'm adding that to my list.
Yeah, I'm impressed with how it went. Yeah, I don't know. I never heard of it before. So it's like, yo, this is interesting. So yeah, maybe give it a try. You may like it, but I'm telling you, it's a little bit, it gets pitchy towards the end. So okay. I'll say that.
All right. Interesting. Yeah. And so you're saying 2.5 stars.
2.5 stars. No, wait. Shit, because it's different, it gets like a 58.
So are you at recommendation stage? Do you recommend people give it a bash?
No, only because of my high standards when I recommend something, I would say no. Not quite.
Well, here's where I finally put Jolt. Everything I've talked about so far is worse than Jolt as far as I'm concerned. That's my number 5.
Number 5, Jolt. Okay, all right. My number 5 is... All right, I actually wanted to get to this movie. It's actually, it's a dual movie. It's called Batman The Long Halloween Part 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. Right? Okay.
And it is a cartoon, okay? And I know no one cares. But I've been watching it, and it took me like fucking hours to watch this because it's 2 movies, literally. I will tell you this.
Do you hear what Wayne does for you, ladies and gentlemen?
Yes. This is actually...
Wayne prepared to watch 11 films for a top 10 last team. That's an extra hour and a half out of his life when he could have been jerking off.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I do when I'm not watching
a Batman film. He probably was jerking off.
Exactly. I can multitask. So it's actually made from a very popular Batman storyline from the comics, Long Halloween. And I will tell you this. The reason it's here, number 5 on my list, is that it is really stylish. It is a stylish cartoon. The animation is not as cool as, like, any of the, like, Pixar's or anything. It's actually normal, standard, jerky sort of animation, all right? But it's very moody. It's mostly dialogue, bro. These two movies are mostly dialogue. Tense room-type situations. Really cool opening credits. Very violent for a Batman cartoon, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Not invincible violent. Not like that.
No, but nothing, people
die
nothing
and,
is.
Yeah, people die and bleed and shit. It's got Jensen Ackles as Batman.
Right.
And Josh Duhamel is Harvey Dent. And although, like, I just kind of did, like, I was sitting there going, I'm not going to talk about this, but I was genuinely intrigued with this show. I know it's Batman, and
What's the basic plot?
The basic plot is, it says, during the holidays, a brutal series of murders strike fear into the city of Gotham, like normal. Batman sets out to pursue the serial killer. It's a serial killer who's killing motherfuckers.
That's a bingo.
With the support of... And James Gordon and Harvey Dent in it. It's basically there's a Halloween killer that goes out, and that's what this is about, right? So it's actually a pretty run-of-the-mill Batman-type story, and I can see why it was like, you know, okay. So to me, it's actually kind of interesting. Batman and Catwoman are fucking in this show.
Uh-huh.
Like, actual slamming. And, like, it's good and daring for a show like this, but like I said, the overly cartoony execution stifled the effect. If this thing was animated like What If, it would go way higher on my list. But I will tell you this, it doesn't end the way you want it to, but you think it will.
Okay.
You probably will not guess the killer. There. That's something.
Okay.
All right.
There we are. You're number 5?
My number 5 it was.
My number 4 is a film from the Russo brothers.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. Is this T-Hall? No.
With Tom Holland?
Yeah, okay.
It's called Cherry.
Ah, I heard
Apple
of this
TV Plus film.
What's it like? Tell me about it.
It is number 4 on my list, on the worst list I've ever had. And this, so
oh, so you are?
It's still not recommending.
Don't recommend? Okay, no. What's it about?
It's basically based on a semi-autobiographical book written by a bloke who did some of the things that are in this film.
Oh.
And wrote the book while he was in prison.
Mm.
And it's called Cherry, I think, as I may have said. And he's actually an unnamed protagonist.
Okay.
Which I only realized about 2/3 of the way through the film.
Like, surely that's good.
Okay. Yeah, it's not layer
quite
cake.
Layer cake. Yeah.
But they literally sort of say, like, oh, that's his, kind of implying that's his name. Cherry drifts from college, drop out to army medic in Iraq, and could only buy his true love, Emily. That's the byline, or one-line description. It starts with him about to rob a bank,
really?
And then does the flashback to how he meets Emily in college, and then how he ends up going to Iraq, and then his time in Iraq, which is probably the best part of the film, the 20 or 30 minutes that are in Iraq. And then he's back, and he's suffering from PTSD really badly, and he gets a bad drug addiction. And things go from there.
Oh.
He winds up robbing banks.
So it's a biopic sort of.
Well, yeah. Again, semi-autobiographical. I did a little bit of reading, and the guy's Nico something. Walker maybe was his last name. He's acknowledged that the book he wrote, things didn't happen that happened in his real life.
Okay. What was wrong with it?
It's all style. It's no substance. It has nothing to say that you don't already realize.
These are the Russo brothers who went ahead and just basically owned Hollywood with all of their Avengers
type
work.
This film is an indeterminately long 140 minutes.
Ugh.
Absolutely does not need to be that long. There are so many longs. It's like Zack Snyder directed this at times. Long slow-mo shots with this pontificating voiceover, which is so fucking pretentious.
Do you know what's happened here, Paul? They went and did Avengers and made the most money anyone ever made ever. And I know that these two actually started their own studio. They actually started their own little thing and all sorts of shit, right? And now, and they got a boatload of money for that and yada, yada, yada. And now they're going, you know what? Let's do an indie film. And let's use Spider-Man in our indie film. It'll be awesome.
Look, I guess it is an indie film compared to Avengers Endgame.
Exactly. No, so let's do an art piece, basically. Let's not do another action movie.
Like I said, it's very well shot. There's some lovely tracking shots. There's some great sort of low angles.
So it looks
great
good.
Overhead shots. So it looks good.
But it's
just
appealing.
It just has nothing to, like, oh, war's bad. Veterans struggle. Drugs are bad, okay?
Okay.
That's all it's saying.
Okay, really?
I'm like, yeah, and the way it sort of winds up, it's almost like, do you remember that movie, The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith?
Yes.
Which is pretty much like 95% of him on a downward spiral.
Yeah.
And then the last 5% like, hey.
Yeah.
This film's even worse than that. It's like, you know, montage, dolly shot at the end.
Does it give you anything at the end to make you not
slit your wrists? No?
Yes. Yes, it does. It does. Right. In the very final 2.5 minutes of the film.
Do you know if this was well received?
No. It's been widely panned. I think it had a 15% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Maybe it's 35. I forget. I watched a lot of shitty films and checked out their Rotten Tomato ratings after I watched them this week.
Was the bank robbery at least good to watch?
There's many bank robberies.
Many bank robberies. Yeah. And were they at least fun or interesting? No. No, right? See, that's fucked up. No. Oh, I messed up. Oh, well.
Yeah. It's a hard film to watch. Though it's a good-looking film,
yes,
there's not enough here to warrant your time. So again, still don't recommend this at my number fucking 4.
Okay, so don't pop your cherry on that movie. All right. Okay, now my number 4. This is an interesting story, people. This was referred to me by someone in the listener community, and it's called The Voyeurs. And
who did the recommending?
It was Peter Grant.
Oh, and number 4 this week seems pretty reasonable.
Well, here's what happened, Paul. All right, the movie's called The Voyeurs, and I believe... he recommended it to me is because there's a lot of T and A in this film. All right? Well, that's not all I'm about, people.
T and A, you say?
T and A. And it's on Amazon, right? It's on Amazon Prime. And it's about these young couple, Pippa and Thomas. They move into their dream apartment in Montreal, and they notice that their window looks directly into the apartment opposite. And in that opposite apartment, there's this volatile relationship of an attractive couple. He's a photographer. God,
it's Rear Window. Woman in the
it
window
is Rear Window. Yep. And they start spying on them simply out of voyeurism because they fucking and shit. But then they find out that this dude who's the photographer, when the wife is out and he'll have a model, naked model during the day, he'll fuck all them. He'll fuck 2 or 3 of them. And the girl of the couple, she actually starts watching them and gets obsessed and starts kind of meddling in their lives and actually sneaks into a party they're having and all this kind of shit. And I'll tell you this. I watched the first act of this, and I went, here's my 10. Here's my number 10. I don't give a fuck about it. It's shit, right? It's crap. I then go, because I had to stop it because I had to go out and whatever, watched a couple of movies in between, came back to this one 2 days ago.
Did you hear that, Julio? Wayne watched movies in between finishing another film.
Well, I kind of made it, I was like, how is this going to go anywhere? Anyway, because the lead dude's voice, sounds like this. I'm not kidding. It sounds like
this. Is Will Smith's son?
Is it?
Am I making that? No, I'm making that up.
Not that I know of. If it is, you know what? Only now that you say that, I kind of think that kind of happened. But I can tell you something. It's distractingly shit. If that's his voice, like, fucking hell. Anyway, he'll never be a rapper. I was, again, the first act, I'm like, what are you going to do? Fine. Then I come back and watch it, and holy shit, this thing takes about 2 or 3 different turns towards its third act, which are hugely shocking. And totally not what you think is going to happen.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Well, okay, cool. And it's sort of
Justice
like...
Justice Smith.
Does sound like... Oh, no, that's...
He was in Jurassic World.
Oh, that's right. Will Smith's kid is that fucking dude that... What's his name? Whatever.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
And Detective Pikachu.
Ah, that's what there you are. Yep. Okay. But yes, the reason this has gotten to my number 4, right, is that it's insanely... Like, the shocks that came, I wasn't seeing coming. And it was actually kind of... elevated it quite a bit as a result of just that final act, because it does go. Don't get me wrong, it's not a wonderful film. It's not this and that. It's just
we're short of wonderful films this week.
We are short of them. I will tell you this, and I'm sorry to notice this, but I'm just going to tell you this real quick. All right, the female lead is fucking off the chain, right? Like her body, I've never seen anything like it. All right, I'm just saying that for you. Okay, all I'm just going to say is that for you. Right,
you are the absolute
worst. I'm a complete
worst.
Asshole. I'm sorry, but you know what? For anyone who's interested out there,
would you like to even give her name, Wayne? Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, Sydney Sweeney is a lovely young lady. That's all I've got to say. All right, so. And I'm
you
sure
monsters keep voting for this guy.
No, I'm sure that. Look, isn't it okay to say that she's beautiful? It's okay, isn't sure. it? So word to Big Bird right there. Yes, The Voyeurs, my number 4. Like I said, if you've got a real open mind and you're looking, because it surprised me so much, that's what bumped me up here, okay? So yeah, give it a try. But there's titties and ass, all right? Titties and ass and titties, a dick or two maybe. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. Let's bail Wayne out there. My number 3 is probably where I start to recommend.
All right.
But only if you're up for this kind of thing.
Again, careful recommendation. Yeah,
careful
say
recommendation.
Myself.
Once I get to number 2, then I will hard recommend my last 2. This is from a first-time director named S.K. Dale. It's called Till Death, and it stars Megan Fox, speaking of hot women.
Oh, I've heard of this one. What's
this
it about?
It's a very straightforward film with elevator pitch idea. What if a woman was chained to her dead husband and bad shit was coming her way?
I know about 4 women who would say that's their position now. All right, sorry.
dead?
Inside.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, long story short, so Megan Fox is this very ultra attractive, married to a very high-powered lawyer in, I think, New York City, and she's cheating on him, and she breaks up with a guy she's cheating on him with.
With, yep.
At just before their 10th wedding anniversary, I think it is. And so he's putting out all the stops, but he's doing it in a creepy, controlling kind of way. Like, she rocks up to dinner, or she rocks up to the office, and she's wearing this gorgeous dress.
Yep. Because
she's a gorgeous woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I thought I told you to wear the red one.
Oh, he's like that.
And she says, no, but I felt like something different. I thought you might like a change. He goes, it's okay. We've got time to swing home before we go to the restaurant.
Really?
So he's that kind of...
controlling ass motherfucker.
Yeah. So they play that quite well. Like, they don't overstate it.
Sleeping with the enemy kind of shit.
Yeah, but not clearly he is, he is a controlling... You know, it's all DV and she's done. She wants out and that's why she's banging around.
Sure.
Plus the heavy implication is he... Well, she accuses him of banging lots of women himself.
Oh, so go get some dick, girl. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Go get it.
So anyway, they go out to this remote lake house. And again, this is all in the trailer and all in the stills imagery. So I'm not really spoiling much here.
Sure.
He blows his own head off.
What?
Right. While he's handcuffed to her.
Why is he handcuffed to her?
Because she wakes up and they're handcuffed together. And, you know, and again, it's implied all the way through the first 20 minutes of this film. He knows that she's cheating on him. And that's what triggers him off to do this.
Dude.
Bam. And then there's a whole bunch of other things happen. I won't spoil anything further than that, except to say it's 90 minutes. You're in, you're out. It's never boring. It's not brilliant.
Hey.
No one's amazing.
That's cool. Never boring is a great thing to say about a show.
Megan Fox is fine in the film. Like, you know, she's not the best actor in the world, but I think she holds her own well here.
Sure.
Some other ne'er-do-wells come into it. Check it out.
And so she's cuffed. Oh, okay. Yep. That's I never would have thought of that premise. So there you are.
Yeah,
something different.
Till Death.
Till Death. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay. My number three is a doco again that actually had a lot of attention. It's called Val.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Okay. So it is in fact a, it's, I guess it's not quite a biopic. It's not quite a doc. It's just an account of his early and current life using actual footage from a camcorder that he got way back in the 80s. He said he was the first person he knew who had a camcorder.
That's which interesting.
Means, yeah. So there's actual, what's cool about this show is that the footage is insane. There's actually like footage of him and young Kevin Bacon and young Sean Penn doing a play together. And then Kevin Bacon's, hey, is that a camcorder? That's really cool, man. And then him and Sean Penn moon the camera, right? And shit like that. And then you see him in his trailer on Top Gun. And there's like Jester and fucking, oh, who is it? Slider and Wolfman are in there with him, right? And they're just hugging around. Obviously either smoking weed or something, right?
Right.
And he then, what's cool about it, and look, that footage stuff is great. You actually start noticing, oh, that's from Ghost in the Darkness. And that, you start to remember how many fucking movies Val was in, including Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, all the way up to that, right?
Sure.
And that is the real gold of this. If you watch that and you go, holy shit, that's interesting. Now, he's pretty fucked up now, Val, right? He's actually...
Throat cancer,
but he's also, it may have been the treatment or whatever, but he looks just really old. Like if you, I mean, look, no one looks as good as Tom Cruise, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because they're in that movie together, you look at them both now, it looks like just like an old man and like a old, you know, whatever. But, and so he, and also his throat is fucked. So he has to, you can't really understand what he says when he talks. So his son is actually narrating the whole thing as Val Kilmer. And they show you that. They show, so it's not, they're not hiding it or whatever. And it's a little bit sad, but a huge thing on it is that it gets the scoop on the Island of Dr. Moreau, right? Because there's actual footage. Anyone who's not in the know, Island of Dr. Moreau, widely panned as the worst movie ever made.
One of.
There's an actual doco called...
has something to say about that.
Oh, God, that's a piece of shit. there's a doco called Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Sanders.
Great documentary.
Check out that documentary, right? Because it's a documentary how shitty this set of that film was. And that doco largely purports that Marlon Brando and Val Kilmer are a couple of self-important pricks.
Yep.
Right? This film has actual footage that he kept on talking to the director with John Frankenheimer, arguing with him. After
Richard Stanley took off into the forest.
Yeah. And Val was saying that he was like, oh, man, you know, like they started to not take Marlon's advice. And that's when I thought this movie was in trouble. If you look at that Richard Stanley documentary, Marlon Brando was saying, I think in the last scene, that character should walk down the road and meet a dolphin. Shit like that? He was saying weird shit like that. Val Kim was like, well, they wouldn't listen to Marlon. No shit! Marlon wants to meet a motherfucking dolphin, man. And this is like, what the... So watching all that is gold. But I will tell you that it's sort of... There's a lot of in-between shots of him and this is my life now, which is a little boring. Just a little boring.
Fair enough.
But it's still worth watching just for that footage. And it also talks about the saint. What up? up.
Yeah, that's what got you over the line, wasn't it?
Well, and he addresses the fact that everyone thinks he's difficult to work with. So, you know, it's not necessarily hiding.
I just don't have the love for Val Kilmer, which is why I've been very hesitant to spend the time on this.
Yeah, maybe put it on while you're watching, while you're playing a video game. I don't know.
Unlike you, Wayne. When I play a video game, I'm playing a video game.
You see, OCD, son. I just got to see a lot of shit. There you go.
All right, well, there you are. So that's your number three. Mm-hmm. My number two is the aforementioned Korean film on my list. I finished watching it today.
Go on.
Whilst my wife drove back from our holiday. Thank you very much to her for doing so.
You watched it in the car. We live in a magic age.
I did watch it in the car, having downloaded it from Netflix to my device. It's called Night in Paradise, as directed by Park Hoon-jung, who has directed a couple other decent Korean films, which I've seen, called one called New World and one earlier this year called The Witch, Part 1, : The Subversion. Which was also pretty good. he's directed a few other films too. They're my two favourites of his. And this film falls right in that sort of ouvoir, if I can say, of style. All Korean films are too long. Flat out. I'm just going to say this now.
Really?
Every Korean film could be cut by about 10 minutes and would be better for it. And so could this film.
Makes sense.
Right? This is 131 minutes long.
Whoa!
Should be 2 hours. At most, arguably, could be 110 minutes and would be a better film for it. And it basically follows a gangster. He's clearly sort of in the middle management echelons, youngish dude, good-looking fella, and he's been courted by a rival sort of higher up to come join his crew. He's loyal to his own man, however, and then a tragedy befalls his family, which sets him on the path to attacking said person who offered him the job. He has to go hide away on this island. Jeju Island, which I've never even heard of before.
Sure.
Which is kind of like this island paradise, I think, off Korea. And he's going to move from there to Russia. They're going to hide him away. There he meets this young woman who's terminally ill and her uncle, who is still running a gun trade through for the Korean gangsters and whatever else. And anyway, meanwhile, bad shit goes down back in Korea and then a whole bunch of people come to kill him.
Okay.
It is...
Are we talking action?
There are action scenes. There's a couple of really big action scenes in the film, but largely, again, like most Korean films,
it's a drama.
It's a drama interspersed with action moments and a lot of bloodshed. Like when the bloodshed goes down, this film, they are not afraid to spray around the claret. And what got it to here, number two on my list, and a 3.5-star rating from me, is the end. You will not see it coming.
What's it called?
It completely circumvents what you would expect to happen in this kind of genre film.
Called
Night in Paradise.
Night in Paradise.
Which makes no fucking sense because he's there for a week. It should be called Nights in Paradise, but anyway.
Night in Paradise. Okay, so if it was shorter, it would be way better.
Yeah, if it was 20 minutes off through the middle portions of the film and whatever else. And I can't really reveal why it's not a 4-star film without giving big spoilers away.
Okay.
Neither can I reveal why it got to 3.5, except to what I've already said. I have to be a little bit coy with this one. But I think it's worth your wait to get to the last 20 minutes of this film, 25 minutes of this film.
Well, number three on your list, is that right? Yeah.
No, two.
Nice. Okay, my number two. Paul, did you ever hear of the, have you ever encountered the Free Britney hashtag?
I know about the story.
Okay, I didn't know about the story, so I watched this film, Britney versus Spears.
Just came out on
Netflix. Yeah, very, very new, and I didn't really know what it means. And it's about Britney Spears and the control her father and his team have over her. Now, did you know that her dad is such a cunt, right? That he...
obviously, this is a pro-Britney documentary.
It is because that's the way... But it actually shows you what he did. And basically, he had conspired with doctors and stuff to place Britney under an involuntary legal precedent called a conservatorship, which I'm not familiar with, but you might be giving your thing. It legally gives her dad, Jamie Spears, complete control over everything she can do, from her finances, her healthcare decisions, what medicine she can take, where she can travel, what she can do with her day, all that sort of shit, right? And it's usually meant for people who are incapacitated, who have assets, and then a relative takes conservatorship to make sure that they don't leave those assets. But usually a person has to be incapacitated for that to happen. And they have showed evidence that there was a doctor that actually came in and gave a falsified report so they could put that on her.
Wow.
She's earning millions and millions of dollars for all these people, yet she's getting like $8,000 a month, like as an allowance.
Don't do that to your child.
He's a fucking prick. And she's been under this restraint for like 20 years, and it was driving her insane. Do you remember when she shaved her head and stuff like that?
Yeah, yep.
That was all because of this. And she's been trying to get a new lawyer for years and years. She kept failing. She kind of went nuts and, you know, all that shit happened. And it's about all the peeps who were doing this to her and basically her fans sounded the alarm because she was doing a residency in Vegas. And she said, okay, I'm going to do another 10-year one. They went, and then she pulled out and everyone like, what's going on here? And everyone's been like basically chasing him down. And guess what? At the end of the doco,
she's still under that conservatorship.
No, it's just been...
It just came... Yeah. Like, days ago, she's like... At the time, she was only made some headway, but now he's actually relinquishing that because of all the shit that went down. But she's been this way for 20 years, man. Can you imagine what that does?
Unbelievable.
And also, she's this rock star, so who knows what that life is even like for those people. Then this happens, it's messed up. And it made me feel bad for her, actually.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm like,
sounds like an awful, awful story.
I mean, as I get older, I understand her meltdown more and more just because of like, yep, life is fucking difficult. <You know? laughs> But this is really bad. So there you are. Britney versus Spears, I do recommend.
Okay, all right. Yeah, likewise, I recommend my number one. I'll just give you the rundown, though, of what is a terrible list of films, which you should avoid all of them until we get to number three. Number 10, Prisoners of the Ghostland, a surefire nomination for my worst of the year. Number 9, Space Jam, A New Legacy. 8, Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins. 7, Demonic. 6, Sweet Girl. 5, Jolt. Wayne's number 10.
Jolt?
Jolt. 4, Cherry. 3, Till Death, not a bad film. 2, Night in Paradise, good film. And my number one is also a surprisingly good genre outing. It's another Netflix film, so Netflix has been high on my rotation.
Mine, I bet it's mine. Go on.
No, it's not. Absolutely not, because this is a horror film.
Oh, okay.
It's not really. I would argue this is a thriller with action elements, but because it involves vampires, people will categorize it as horror.
Yep.
It's called Blood Red Sky.
Blood Red Sky. Tell me about Blood Red Sky.
Basically a German film.
German.
Directed by Peter Thorwerth. A good portion of the film is in English, though, because... they're on an international plane flight and there's lots of characters who speak English. Mm-hmm. So they revert to that at certain points through the film. It basically follows a mother who, what you think is transporting her son to get a life-saving operation in another country.
Yep.
I can't remember where it is.
So she's on the plane, yep.
But it turns out that actually she's going for herself because she has vampirism, having been bitten. And
holy shit!
And they had to take the right flight, so she's always at night, right?
So she doesn't...
Meanwhile... on the plane flight, a bunch of hijackers get on board.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah, and take over the plane.
And she's a vampire and she fucks them up.
Yep.
That's cool. Oh, and she takes the flight at night because in the daytime she can't be seen by the sunlight.
Yep.
Oh.
So she's going to pick the right flight to fly, you know, following the dateline so that you don't ever get into daylight.
And in this world, vampirism can be cured by surgery.
There's a potential promise for that, yes.
Huh. And the boy?
And the boy is just, you know.
Normal?
Well, she's, because through the film, it stops to go back and show you how she got bitten and how she got caught this disease, if you want to call it that.
Cool. So the boy doesn't have it?
No.
No. Oh, so it's a normal boy and a vampire mom fucking up terrorists.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Basically.
Sounds great.
And Dominic Purcell is the head terrorist.
Oh, so it's not all German. It's like, no. Very cool. Rating?
3.5 stars.
3.5 stars.
Yep. Solid film. I enjoyed it. I liked where it went. It is a little long. I'll give it that. It's a 2-hour film. Probably could have, again, had 10 minutes cut off.
Mm.
But
I think every film is too long. Yeah. You know what? But there's only a few films. We could use more of that.
Yeah. In some ways, no. I won't say any more than that.
Yeah.
Well worth your time. This is one of Netflix's better films. And I know that Dan from Netflix and Swill does not agree with me. He thinks this film was shit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care, Dan. This is, if you've seen all the other 9 films on my list, you'll understand why it gets to 3.5 stars.
The name again?
Blood Red Sky.
Blood Red Sky. Fantastic. All right, folks, here's my 10 to 2, then 1. 10 was Jolt. 9 was Vacation Friends. 8, The Mystery of D.B. Cooper. 7, The Protégé. 6, Happily. 5, Batman, The Long Halloween, Parts 1 and 2. 4, The Voyeurs. 3, Val. 2, Britney vs. Spears. And my number one, here's why my list is worse than yours, Paul. My number one film is an Antoine Fuqua film.
Oh my God.
That's right.
The Guilty.
Yeah.
Ah, I
just saw it like yesterday.
Hang on. Hold on. I need to find something on here. Anyway.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Antoine Fuqua is number one on a positive list of films.
Is it though? I mean, like, look, this was just the one that sort. Okay, here's what it is. Here's what The Guilty is, right? It's Jake Gyllenhaal. And that's basically the film, because it's one of those cult phone booth type movies where he's a policeman who's on the 911 line. He's been busted down to that for some reason that you find during the film.
Okay.
And he is taking a 911 call. There's only like 2 other actors in this who are just bit parts. There's other people in the office while he's there, all right? All of it happens over the phone, okay? The voices are like Ethan Hawke, Riley Keough, Bill Burr, Paul Dano, Peter Sarsgaard. So you get some actual people in there, which is what makes me think this is a COVID film. Because
sounds like it.
They must have just shot it in one set. And there's like 3 people on stage. You know what I mean? So there you are. And you can actually feel his tension and his anxiety as he's trying to deal with basically an abduction, which is called into him. And he's in contact with the woman who's being abducted because she fakes a phone call to him. He's in contact with her kids. There's a baby. And one of the kids is 6 years old and there's a baby and they're alone in a house because she's abducted. So he's trying to get to all of his friends and trying to get them to fucking come by. And you never leave him on the phone.
Okay.
So the whole performance is him. He owns the movie. And Jake Gyllenhaal's a good fucking actor, man.
Yeah,
he's absolutely really good. Yep. The whole time you get little hints that he's up against something, like you find out that he's got a trial coming up, so something's going on with him, and you just see little clues turn up here and there. But what it is, like, it's good for what it is, basically. It's not going to be this movie that's like, oh, what's up, but it gives you the moments you need in a one-set film like this. It's well acted, well written, great voice performances, and at the end I realized it was Antoine Fuqua. I went, fuck! So don't get me wrong, all right? It's not exactly a feat of directing because it is this very small sort of scoped movie, sure, shall we say, all right? But I still recognize that in order to get a great performance and a great movie, you as a director have to have a vision that actually makes it work. Because it's hard to make this guy on a phone a whole movie.
Yeah, I agree. Right? I agree.
So give him props.
On paper, it's really boring. It kind of puts me off just knowing that it never gets out.
I completely understand. It's like, and so, and again, I didn't, there wasn't a moment where I noticed, like I was like, oh, I really need to see that thing that's happening in his ear. It's like I was happy to stay with him. So that's something right there. So there you go. Never let it be said that I'm biased about shit just because I hate the
Antoine
director.
Antoine Fuqua.
Okay? This is not as good as Training Day, don't get me wrong, but it's like not as it's not as shit as everything else he done. So there you go.
All right.
There you are.
No need for honorable mentions, obviously, in a top 10 last 10.
Yes.
So we hope you've got something there to, well, many films to avoid and a few that you might go and check out. But let's see what listeners have to say in the segment that ends every show. It's called The Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Joey DiCarlo from the So Is It podcast, which I'm laughing because he's just summarized Prisoners of the Ghostland perfectly. I'd rather get both testicles blown off than ever watch a second of this again.
Do you mind if I just mention Josh Ragland?
Go ahead.
Who actually wrote to us and said, hey, Wayne, check out What If, which is a Daniel Radcliffe film, and it's a rom-com, all right? Mm-hmm. And I actually started watching it, and I was like, oh, shit, I've already seen this. I actually covered it in episode 299, Josh. It's actually called The F Word over here, but it's actually pretty great. So go ahead, have a look.
There you are. Thank you for that, Josh. Troy Spinner, one of the hosts of the Comic Confidential podcast, said, The Marksman, old man Liam Neeson movie that dragged longer than Liam Neeson's cock.
I almost watched this, and then I watched it. Did you?
Yeah, I didn't bother because there's not much more to say about it. It is so fucking boring.
I watched the trailer and I went, I don't give a fuck.
It's boring. It's horrendously predictable. It's a terrible film.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. So right there with you, Troy. From Austin Scott, a positive review. Captain Fantastic, one of the more beautiful films I watched in a long time. To sell Wayne on it, Viggo Mortensen's Mortensen cock makes an appearance. 5 stars.
All right, Aragorn Dick, what up?
Luigi Wheels Tyrone, a patron to the show, said The Good Liar on Netflix. Helen Mirren and Ian McKellen acted their asses off in this. The twist is great.
I've seen this one. It's good.
I remember you talking about it on the show. My brother, he said The Suicide Squad, best movie of the year. So much fun. If you disagree, fight me.
Mm-hmm.
My wife even watched and enjoyed it. We constantly quote King Shark in our household now. Nom noms?
Oh, I thought it'd be like, hand.
Chris Yeaney, another high-level patron of the show, said, Tarnation, a.k.a. Creature Cabin, is a 2017 B-movie horror comedy. This is one of the best Australian movies I've ever seen because I've yet to see Reap.
Good one.
And it has both titty and peen for anyone interested. Jamie Davies said The Green Knight, gorgeously shot, brilliantly acted, madness. Well, Jamie, you probably heard our review by now. Sorry about that. Matt Evans said Paw Patrol, the movie. A new character, Liberty, added to the team, and my guess, another toy I'll be stepping on at 3 a.m. when I get up for a piss.
Kids film, have you seen this with your daughter?
Oh, God. No? Okay. It's too old for her. Laurie Miller said Kipchoge, The Last Milestone, is a documentary about a Kenyan marathoner trying to break the 2-hour mark. It starts out a little slow, but it's worth it, the wait for the ecstatic climax.
Sounds like your kind of film, Runner Boy. Life.
Yeah, I've seen it. I haven't seen the film. I watched this live attempt for him to do under a 2-hour marathon in controlled conditions.
You watched the actual event?
Event. You know, myself and a friend of mine who's a runner that happened to be around, and we stuck it on the table in the middle of us and, you know, watching how he paced himself to break this record.
Wow.
So they had it all, everything, including a group of people running in and around him to keep him at pace, and they would just drop off every however long, every 2Ks they would drop off, and he would maintain that pace the whole
42Ks. Oh, I think you told me about this. Yeah, cool.
As well as the right wing conditions and everything
else.
Yeah,
that's insane.
They really, but he did it. He did it. Not to spoil the film, but.
Very cool.
Lee Allen Thomas said, Boss Level, funny, entertaining, and beautifully violent.
Damn right.
Great film. Good choice there. Ation Filion Survey said, finally watching Training Day upon your guys' recommendation. Speaking of Fuqua.
Oh, yeah.
Denzel is amazing in it.
Oh, yeah.
And Fuqua is the best director. I didn't write that.
No, it is brilliant. Absolutely. My N-word.
Yeah. So... I just stopped.
That's my Denzel impression.
Yeah, okay. Blake Jarvis, Val, an insightful catalogue of a much maligned actor who has gone through rough times recently.
Okay.
That is it for this week's feedback. Thank you so much, everyone. Nice one, brother. Back with their reviews in the Facebook listener community, I should say. And that's where you can go to contribute to the show on a week in and week out basis. Wayne, well, how else do people get back to us and on the social medias and all the like?
Google The Countdown Podcast for all our socials or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. Like and follow the show through Podbean, where you host. Check out ccradio.com.au for the other great shows that are part of the network, Comic Confidential, and I believe, I want to use that joke this week. Shit.
Yeah, fine. It's okay. Standard is low.
What's happening next week, Wayne, for episode 341?
Let's see, anus. I don't know.
It's just Wayne's way of vamping. Well done.
Vamping.
Wayne's
vamping,
version of vamping is three words. Let's see. Anus.
Now we are. Okay. Next week, we got some guests, people.
We do. It's been a while since we've had guests on the show. So we're having Montego Bradley and Tifabot from Fans on Patrol.
I
hope you enjoy this. And it's going to be returning to the old format. Mm-hmm. I was like, we haven't done this at least in a year.
Exactly.
Maybe more. Maybe two. Maybe before COVID.
Mm.
It's Show V Show.
Show V Show.
So Montego and Tiff are going to put together their list of the top 10 fantasy films.
Mm.
Wayne and I are going to meet separately and record this, of course, for the patrons.
Our top 10 fantasy films.
Our top 10 fantasy films. So you want to get to hear how Wayne and I struggle our way through.
Yes, it will be completely bloody. 10. It'll be bloodbath.
It will be, potentially.
What do you mean, no Willow? And so on. So,
oh, funny you say that. I watched a bit of that yesterday, literally while I was away on holiday.
Is that going to be on your list?
Oh, no.
No, motherfucker. Don't put it on your list. Actually, Val Kilmer talked about that. Insane, yeah. Anyway.
Mad Mardigan. Yeah, but anyway, so very much looking forward to having Montego and Tiff on the show, and it should be very interesting to return to that old format. That's it from us today for episode 340 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. Thank you for so much joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
You can't handle the truth.
Willow's not that good a film.
fuck. Sorry, everyone. See you later.
Damn it. That was good. We'll catch you next time. Bye.